This is how weird I am. I was enjoying a hot dog yesterday, and went into my refrigerator to put a condiment on. Not a condom, a condiment. I don't put on a condom while I'm eating a hot dog. Although, anyway. So I'm looking for a condiment, and should I do ketchup? Should I do a mustard? And there is a bottle of Grey Poupon mustard in my refrigerator, and I spread it on the hot dog, and it was perfectly fantastic. I then, because I have this strange analytical mind, I festered in my head for about an hour, why did they call this thing Grey Poupon? It's not gray, it's mustard colored. Mustard even has a color named after it. Mustard is a mustard color. And yet, they call this thing Grey Poupon. Now, I could have done all kinds of Google searches to find out why they call it Grey Poupon. It's probably there was some Major General Grey or something that they named the mustard after. I don't know. I don't think that's any type of a tribute. General Grey, you've been a wonderful general leading our troops into battle and victory. Your name shall live in infamy. We're going to name mustard after you. We're going to take some mustard, the thing that you slap on a hot dog, and we're going to name a condiment after you because of our thanks for what you've done for our military and for our country. Thank you for your service. Thank you for the mustard. I mean, I don't know why it's called Grey Poupon, but it bothered me through most of the day to try to figure out why mustard has any kind of correlation to the color gray. I this is the problem that I have. And if you say, well, Ron, maybe you should be seeing somebody about your mind that just will not settle down, I would say, why? What's the point? When you settle my mind down, what do I do with it then? I was talking to a friend about this, and I use the friend in air quotes, because it's somebody that I know who I've had conversation with. If that's your definition of friend, go for it. We were talking, and he says, Ron, and everybody calls me Ron for some reason. He says, Ron, he says, why don't you do meditation? I said, are you serious? What do you want me to do, take a Valium? I mean, meditate, that's the opposite of that's why I can't. Well, you're so stupid. I went to a barbecue yesterday because it was July 4th. It's what you do. If you don't go to a barbecue, you are kicked out of the country. You are deported. I went to a barbecue. Two things happened there which were remarkable. First of all, there was a guy, I go to this barbecue once a year on July 4th. Other than that, I don't see these people at all during the entire year. It's a gathering of people, and it's just been a tradition. And I go, and whenever I go, it's the same people there. There's like eight of them. And we have a nice barbecue at these people's house. It's always at their house. And that's pleasurable. They're pleasurable people. But once a year, that's it. That's the only time I see them, once a year. So this one guy comes over to me, and he puts his hand out, and he says, Rob, it's been a year. How you doing? It's Rob, right? And I said, no, it's Ron. I said, Ron, good to see you. And I don't even know the guy's name. If I don't know somebody's name and I don't remember it, I don't refer to them by name. It's a little trick that I have. It's not a real big deal. You just don't use their name in the conversation in the sentence. Not a big deal. Doesn't mean anything. Through the entire afternoon, he's calling me Rob. And finally, and this is fun. It's fun. Try this at home. Finally, at the end of the day, I give in. I say, yeah, I'm Rob. Yeah, keep calling me Rob. I guess that's who I am. I mean, what's the difference if I'm Rob to you? Why am I bothering correcting you? Why is it so important to me to say to this guy, it's Ron? for what purpose? If he thinks I'm Rob, I'm Rob. Who cares? This is a name. Anyway, so we're sitting there at this this BBQ, and everything's fine and everything's nice, and it hits me because these people are perfectly nice people. There's eight of them. Seven out of eight of them are not. They're Americans, but they weren't. Their parents were immigrants, or they were actually immigrants when they were children. One lady is from the Azores. Another is from Hawaii, which I think is a different country. another two are indeed Spanish. One's Portuguese, and delightful people. And it saddened me because I'm sitting at a gathering of people, and I know going on in the back of their minds how hurt they are with this immigration crap. Everything was fine. And the inference that everybody that comes to this country is a rapist or a murderer or just wants to pocket things off of us is just disgusting. And I read a story yesterday that a woman tried to scale the Statue of Liberty, and they had to take her off the statue. They had to close the whole island for a while. She was protesting about the shameful immigration policies. The day that you're supposed to be proud to be an American, I wasn't, and I'm not unpatriotic in the least, but it was sad because I could have really been proud of this country on July 4th, but instead I was hurt. And everybody kept saying at this, out of eight people, a lot of them immigrants, two of them were actual Republicans. Even they said to me in cryptic language, "We're also sad." It was not a happy July 4th. And when I heard the patriotic songs, I actually got a little bit perturbed at this president that we have. For screwing things up. As I've said so many times, I don't mind policy differences politically. But when you have a guy that wants to be king, and you have a guy that constantly insults, screams, displays continual anger, berates people, acts like a schoolyard bully and then some, can't put sentences together, uses adjectives that make no sense or are used by two-year-olds, those that can talk. He is an embarrassment. He is destroying our relationship with our allies that have been with us since the Industrial Revolution, and have allowed us to thrive both economically and socially in this world, on this globe. He has shunned them. He has created, in his own way, an economic war, a trade war, with all countries where prices quite soon will start soaring, and you will pay the price. And he has cozied up, complimented, and idolized dictators. I don't understand what's going on. It's got to be a form of mental illness. So yesterday was not a proud day for me. It was a sad day. And that in itself was not a good thing. Sorry to bore you with all this stuff, but here we go.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird. If you like that sort of thing.
I didn't like that sort of thing.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you, Julie. Welcome to the program. I don't know if you felt the same way I did yesterday, but I'm just telling you, that's, you know, we're all different. Some of us are mustard colored, some of us are ketchup colored, you know what I'm saying? We're all different. We all come from different backgrounds. We all come from different experiences. I believe our parents shape our future. It's the way that we're raised. It's what our parents instilled upon us. See, here's the deal, kids. When we're young, when we're like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years old, we are not developed enough to think on our own, to process, to analyze. You can't do it. Your brain is not that advanced. So everything that your parents do when they're raising you at that young, tender age, all their habits, the things that they do, the television that they watch, the radio they listen to, the papers they read, the books that they may have or may not have in their house, the traditions, the way that they treat you, that all filters into you without you processing what it is. It just becomes what it is. You don't start processing stuff until you're like 9, 10 years old. Other than that, it's just osmosis. It's osmosis without thought. That's why it's so important. And to have children, you don't have to do anything but go to a couple of classes to push the baby out. They don't teach you how to be a parent. That's something you learn from your parents. Parent, parents, guardian, whatever the case may be. Independence is not something that is taught. It's something that is in a child and an adult. Respect, morals, it's something that's instilled upon them. It's not a choice that they make. Sometimes you consciously do things the opposite of what your parents did, in spite of them, for spite, whatever the case may be. But it's osmosis, baby. You are a product of who raised you. And I guarantee you that every single human being on the face of this earth, at a point in their lives, probably when they're about 40 or 50 years old, or maybe even 60, but somewhere in that age area, every human says to themselves, oh my God, I'm turning into my parents. Oh my God, I'm turning into my mother. Oh my God, I'm turning into my father. And most of it is, oh my God, because we don't want to be them. We want to all feel that we are our own person and we were not influenced to the point where we're turning into the people that raised us. That's an oh my God thing. It's not a good thing. Nobody says, what I've just realized, I'm turning into my father. Good deal. Good deal. He was a great man. If I'm turning into my father, this is wonderful. Very few people say that. Most people say, oh my God, I'm turning into my father. Oh no, I never thought this would happen. Oh my God, did I just say that? I'm turning into my father. Oh my God, no. I can't be turning into him. And you know, oh my God, I'm turning into my mother. It's a horrendous, horrible revelation. What's up with that? Man, it's a crazy world. I've just begun to write a book. I've yet to title it. I have like 5 or 6 different working titles. If I could make a career of just coming up with titles for books, I'd be a billionaire. But it doesn't work like that. It just doesn't work like that. So I'm writing a book. And it was a very slow start because I have no discipline. It's amazing I can even spell that word because I don't have it. I have no discipline. I am a fly-by-the-seat-of-my-pants kind of guy. I fly by the seat of my pants. I don't know what the hell that phrase means. I live life as if my ass were flying in the sky, driving itself. I don't know what that means. My ass takes me places that I don't want to go to? I mean, what does that mean? I think it means that you don't plan for anything, but I don't know how we got to that example. Well, I don't plan for anything, so you know what I mean? It means that my ass is in control in flying. My ass will fly all over the place. Wow, I don't understand what that means, Ron. Or Rob, shall I call you Rob? Yeah, whatever. It doesn't make a difference to me what you call me. It's an old phrase. Doesn't matter what you call me, just don't call me late for dinner. Is that why people are fat? I don't care as long as I eat. God, what a society. So I'm writing a book, and it's not that easy to do. I mean, a lot of people say, Ron, why don't you just sit down and write the damn thing and stop complaining about it? You spend more time complaining about writing it than you do writing it. Yes, that's true. That's very true. Maybe I should just do a radio show and complain about things on a daily basis. Well, don't you do that already, Rob? Yes. Well, then why are you writing a book? Okay, stop it. Okay, just stop it now. Anyway, it's not easy. It's basically, the book is about my observations about things that make no sense to me and won't make any sense to me for the rest of my life. And I had a feeling that I should write these things down. That's another sign of age. My mother, God rest her soul, again, whatever that means, people will say she's passed on to another world. No, she died. I mean, I don't understand what this passed on to. Where do you, I don't know where you go. No one came back and told me. Wouldn't that be fantastic if someone could actually contact the spirit world? A lot of people say they can. And actually just pose the question to them. Where? What is it like where you are? What the hell's going on over there? I mean, do you have dinner? I mean, like, what happens? Where do you go when you're deceased? Nobody asked that question. Oh, forgot to ask. I wanted to know if they still love me and where they put the damn will and testament. We can't find it. I forgot to ask what it's like where they are. Can you describe it? Is there a rule that they're not allowed to do that? I mean, why is it? Anyway, see, that's the problem with me. It's really not a problem. It's kind of fascinating, to be honest with you. Just don't call me late to dinner. I have no idea what I was talking about. So my mother, wherever she may be, when she turned about 60 years old, she started writing everything down. And it wasn't so that other people could know what she was doing. It's so she could remind herself what was going on. My mother would say to me, Rob, she got my name wrong too. She would say, Rob, I can't figure out, they got all these buttons on the dishwasher and I just press the on button. So, well, Mom, what you do is you press the on button and then the Santa rinse, sanitized rinse is a good thing. And then the dry heat kind of thing, as opposed to the hot water, is also very good. Cleans the dishes really well. So let me write this down. And she got into the habit of writing everything down. I mean, anything that bared any resemblance to instructions whatsoever, she felt that she could no longer remember that. She had to write everything down. And all over the house were these post-it notes of instructions on how to do things because she feared that she would forget what I just said or that someone told her instruction-wise. And I found myself, maybe about a year ago, starting to write a lot of stuff down. And I don't think it's because I fear that I may not remember it. It's because I know I won't remember it. When you're younger, like in your 20s and like 30s, you kind of retain every piece of information. Your brain is just like an incredible computer. When you get older, you can't trade in the computer for a new one. You're stuck with that computer for your entire life, that computer that we call our brain. It starts like to get all filled up with all this RAM stuff, and you can't delete it. So you run out of space. I think that's what it is. So at a certain age, you start to realize, I'm not remembering stuff anymore. I mean, I do remember a lot, but not everything. I used to remember stuff that I didn't even try to remember. It just retained. It just, by nature, it just retained. Now I have to come up with little tricks. All right, wait a minute. So the phone number is 774. So let's see, 7 is a lucky number. So I'll just repeat 7 again. 4, that would be like, let's see, a half of 7, but like one up. I got to have to play little games to try to remember things. And here's the scary part. You kids out there that are turning like 35 or 40, you're already cooked. You don't even realize it. You're just too young to realize that you're starting your cooking process now. I don't know where I saw it, but there's a chart of the development of the brain in the human body. And you're peeking out around like 30, 35. After that, it's a downward slide. And I thought, wow, that's an early slide that you're doing there. And it's very gradual. It's very gradual. Yeah. And by the time you hit like 60, you're more in the, you know, you're more like, all right, I'm getting old, so what the hell? Yeah, I'm remembering stuff. I'm not remembering stuff. Whatever. And that's why, as I said on the show last week, my favorite word now is whatever. I've taken that on as being my baby. I'm in the whatever mode. When you hit the whatever mode, it's not so bad. Whatever. I don't have any money. I can't pay the rent. Whatever. I'm going to worry about it. Whatever. I'm not 20 anymore. Whatever. Whatever. The world is changing around me. Whatever. What am I going to do about it? Whatever. Fascinating attitude. Anyway, there you have it. We have a great guest today, and we're going to speak to that guest right after this little ditty. As you probably know, I am a certified newsman.
This is your source for all the news that matters. Hard-hitting, unbiased, investigative journalism, ready to break...
Sorry, John, that's the wrong copy.
Sorry, what?
Yeah, no, it's not right. Is it under the...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's this other sheet. That makes so much more sense. Okay.
Okay, let's go again.
You're listening to a podcast that has Ron Van Dam on it. It's the Ron Van Dam Podcast on New England Broadcasting.
Hi, Central.
Hi, Andrew. How are you?
Hi. Very well, thank you. And you?
I'm very good. Andrew Rowan is president of the Wildlife Land Trust Board of Directors and chief scientific officer for the Humane Society of the United States. And thanks for being with us here. We're talking about a subject that is so near and dear to my heart that I actually get angered when people don't understand what I'm talking about. But let's talk about the Wildlife Land Trust. For those that may not be familiar, what exactly is that entity?
Well, it's a land protection entity. We basically either take control of land, we get fee title, or we establish and manage an easement on the land that, in our case, protects the land for wildlife and especially from hunting and trapping.
Okay.
So we're one of the few land trusts in the country that will provide that protection. It's a challenge. One of the reasons why other land trusts don't do it is because it is a challenge. And so we have to develop, we're developing approaches and technologies that help us monitor the land so that we can guarantee that it will remain free of hunting and trapping, but also be a what we call a shelter without walls for all the wildlife that live on it.
Now, in many cases, your organization has sought out to do that. In other cases, do you go to acquire certain lands in certain areas in order to actually take them over?
We will do that. We have a generous donation of a large parcel of land in southern Oregon, up in the mountains in southern Oregon, and we have expanded that property and tried to build connectivity with other lands around it by purchasing some of the land. So, you know, purchasing of land is expensive, and so we don't do it very often, and we need to raise the funds to so that we can do more of it.
Mm.
But it's something that is certainly part of the toolbox that we use to try and protect land and protect the connectivity of land. Mm. That's a key issue, especially for the larger animals.
Mm.
They need to have large spaces, and those spaces need to be connected so they can get back and forth.
How is it enforced? In other words, if someone is trespassing or hunting or trapping on trust land, then that would be that's an arrestable offense. How is that handled?
Well, I mean, we try to develop good relationships with the neighbors and let them understand. And they tend to, you know, even the people who do the hunting and trapping on their own lands will respect what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
And so, by and large, we haven't had a lot of problems there. We're working with fish and wildlife agencies in the states. We're helping some of them out with a decoy, which is a model of an animal with a camera in it. And some of those decoys have, in fact, led to arrests of poachers. And it's a way for us to maintain a positive relationship with the local law enforcement, wildlife law enforcement people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, it's, and then of course with new technologies, with solar powered cameras and with drone technologies, we're exploring what we might be able to do with those.
Yeah, wow. So it gets pretty complicated. Well, what you're doing is wonderful, certainly. I'm, you know, besides that, I'm also concerned about overdevelopments. I see so many in neighborhoods and suburbs, in wide open areas, I see a lot of trees and forests being destroyed in order to clear out hundreds and hundreds of acres to put up homes, developments, industrial parks. To me, that's a concern as well.
Yes. It is, and I mean, that's part of what we, you know, one of our sort of little catchphrases is that we lose 6,000 acres of land, of habitat every day. And so in terms of the larger United States, that's a relatively small amount, but nonetheless, it adds up. And over time, what you find is that you've suddenly lost all of that wild land that you remembered as a boy that you used to roam around
exactly.
on. I know certainly... you know, I grew up in Cape Town, and I used to run around all over the mountains in Cape Town, and there's an awful lot of development that's happened in the places that I used to go, and most of them are no longer the places I used to go.
Yeah, I don't understand why we don't redevelop what we already have as opposed to building new things and letting the stuff we have just fall apart, but that's a whole other subject, I suppose. Something of this multitude and magnitude needs public support, quite obviously.
Yes, and I mean, if people are interested, either in, you know, having us protect their land or in providing funding for this. And the best way is to go to wildlifelandtrust.org, our website, and that will give you an entree into the into what we can do for you.
Good talking to you, and always worth talking about. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks very much, Ron. Thanks. Have a good day.
Thanks, Andrew. Bye-bye. Have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful day. Make it the best day you possibly can under the circumstances. Enjoy life. That's what it's here for. Until next time, like tomorrow, I wish you peace.